Good morning. I invite you to open your Bibles this morning, book of Proverbs, chapter 4. Book of Proverbs 4. We're going to take a sentence from there in just a moment to get us started this morning. Book of Proverbs, chapter 4. And while you're turning there, let me tell you how glad I am to see you today. Good to be with you, be back with you, and missed worshiping with you last Sunday. I'm very thankful to Randy Tomlinson for his good work last Sunday morning and for Ray Parham's song service last Sunday night. Gave me a chance to take a day off and relax a little bit, and I appreciate that so much, but I'm glad to be back with you this morning and looking forward to our time together. To those who are visiting with us today, we want you to know how glad that we are that you are with us. It's a holiday weekend in this country, and so we do have some friends and family among us, and we're thankful that you are worshiping God with us here today. If you're from the community and this is your first time here at Kleinwood, we want you to know how very welcome you are as well. And if you haven't already received the visitor's packet, we'd love for you to have one before you go this morning. You can get one at any of the doors to the auditorium. And especially in that visitor's packet, there's a light blue visitor's card. And we'd love to hear from you. Any questions, comments, concerns you may have, any spiritual needs we might be able to help you with. But we're glad that you are here this morning. Book of Proverbs, chapter 4 and verse 7. Wise man says this. He says, the beginning of wisdom is this. Get it. Get wisdom. And whatever you get insight. We're more familiar with Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 9, I will say, which is, or verse 7 rather, Proverbs 1 and verse 7, which says that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. But sometimes you even got to go a step further back than that. And the first step, really, the wise man says is, no, you need it and work on getting wisdom at all. Get wisdom, get insight, get understanding, get the ability to see things for what they are and to know what to do in situations that there are no rules for as such. The challenge is this. The challenge is that we live in an age in which wisdom as such is not valued. There's no money in that. There's no employability in wisdom. Only practicality, only facts and knowledge and skills are valued in our culture, in our time, in our place. Only practicality, the immediacy of the moment. And of course, practicality quickly becomes a justification in the moral realm for doing whatever it is that we want to do, whatever the moment seems to require or whatever we want to do in that moment, whatever is convenient or comfortable, whatever makes me happy or fulfilled, whatever distracts me and keeps my mind off the enormity of my own mortality, which ought to drive me to seek true wisdom and perspective on my life and what it means to exist and be alive at all. Indeed, in our society, in a very real sense, we often mistake knowledge and wisdom. By definition, wise people will always be knowledgeable, but not all knowledgeable people are wise. I love the story of the Titanic from a century ago now, 100 years ago. Remember the story of the Titanic? It was a ship that at least in legend, even God couldn't sink. It was an engineering marvel in its day. Even God couldn't sink. It took a lot of knowledge and know-how 100 years ago to build a ship like the Titanic. They needed more wisdom to keep it floating. To know how to build something, know how to do something is one thing. To know how to rightly use something, how to rightly navigate through life, that's a whole different issue. The difference between knowledge and wisdom. Indeed, nearly 100 years ago, the Nobel Prize-winning poet T.S. Eliot wrote this line in one of his poems. He asked 100 years ago, where is the wisdom we have lost in knowledge? We know so much about so many things, and yet the more we learn and the more we know in a factual and intellectual sense, the less wise we are about what life is for and how to live and cause and effect in human behavior. The Bible is actually very much concerned with wisdom, not just the facts of who God is and what He's done, but the wisdom of what it means and how it impacts then the good life. The Bible well understands, and this is part of why the law of Moses yields to the new covenant in Christ, the Bible well understands that rule-based living as such, like a law of Moses was, where you have a rule for every situation, what you can eat and where you can walk and what day it is and things like this, that rule-based living necessarily has its limits. There will never be enough rules for every situation you can encounter in life, which is why you need wise people, principled people who understand a value system, a perspective on life, God's own perspective, so that when you sometimes find yourself in situations there's not a rule for, you can know what is the godly right or righteous thing to do because you understand what God's principles and God's values are. But it takes wisdom to move from principle to application. Therefore, the Bible has always wanted its people, even in the days of the law of Moses, even in the days when Proverbs would have been written 3,000 years ago in the heart of the Mosaic era, to get wisdom, to learn how to live well by not just knowing, but by being able to see and apply and think and recognize. our way through life based on God's commands and God's principles and God's values. In the New Testament, one of the best passages, I think, that illustrates, in a sense, the challenge of doing this well under the sun in the few years of our lives in this world is this. Well, James writes in James 3, beginning in verse 13, James puts it this way. He says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." And so James begins here. James begins by basically saying this. Wise people are recognized by not what they know, but by how they live. Who's wise, James asks? Let him show it by his good conduct. Let his life show that he's a wise person. Wisdom is not what you know. Wisdom is not even what you say. Wisdom is best seen in how you live. The wise people don't just know things and know mysteries. Wise people know how to apply them, how to navigate life well. A wise person is shown in the fruits of their life. Religiously, this becomes a difference between knowing the Bible as just facts and stories, things to be known, versus recognizing and understanding how to apply the facts and the stories, understanding how to take God's commands and live them in the real world, how to make them incarnate, just as Jesus made God incarnate to us, how to translate the Bible's facts and the Bible's stories and its commands and its principles and its precepts, how we translate them from ancient culture to modern situation. Can I look at the world and the situations I find myself in and recognize the common humanity in them, strip away all the technological knowledge and all the technological shallowness of our age, and see the basic human issues of right and wrong, of sin and salvation in them, and in so doing, respond with truly biblical wisdom in my living? James begins to say, it's shown in how you live. It's shown in the fruits of your life. Envy and ambition, James brings up. You show wisdom with your good conduct. Let him show it in the works of meekness and wisdom. But if your life is nothing but bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, don't boast and lie against the truth. Because you know what James says, basically? That shows up in your life. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. It will work itself out in your life, and you'll see the results of that in your life, James says. Your lack of wisdom. The fact that really you don't have God's virtues and values in you. You have the world's ways. And you're envious and jealous. You have ambition, and so you need to run over people to get your way in life. It's seen in the disorder in every evil practice that results, the fruits of a life grounded in this sort of approach to living. And see, this type of thing, this kind of wisdom test that James is talking about, it's not going to be seen on Sunday mornings. It's not going to be seen here today among us. It's going to be seen Monday through Saturday. It's going to be seen in your life. It's going to be seen at home. Everybody's always on their best behavior on Sunday morning here. Everybody's always on their best behavior. You're not going to see the envy and the strife work its way out. But let me ask you something. Be honest with yourself, because that's what James says too. Don't boast and lie against the truth, James says. Be honest with yourself. What's your home life look like? Does everybody have to change who they are on Sunday morning to make sure the brethren still believe certain things about your family, but when we get home it's nothing but screaming and yelling and constant conflict? What about your workplace? What about your workplace? Are you the person that people dread when they come around? Are you the kind of boss that people dread to work for? Are you kind of coworker that nobody trusts? What are the fruits of your life, James says? That's the real test of what kind of wisdom, if any, undergirds your life. What does your life look like? And so James basically reminds us that there are really two wisdoms. And one is we're always operating under a wisdom of some sort, an ultimate value system, an ultimate ideology that ties our life together. We are hardwired by our maker to live consistent lives. Most of us live consistently with assumptions that we haven't examined. We are motivated by unexamined assumptions that we're often unaware of. But most of us live consistently with something. And James says, look, here's how it goes. Here's how it goes. There's a way that the world ultimately thinks and lives consistently with, And there's a way of God. God's wisdom versus the world's wisdom. And I will tell you, especially young people, sometimes the wisdom of the world is consciously set up against God's wisdom, God's way of doing life and what a godly life looks like. We especially, and young people, listen to me on this, we especially live in a time and a place when all right-thinking people assume their way of the world and their way of living. All right-thinking people assume that the most important commandment is the 11th commandment, thou shalt tolerate all. When we begin to hear phrases like right-thinking people believe this, or forward-thinking people know this, or you want to be on the right side of history, that's the language of the world talking. That's the language of worldly wisdom. That's not an argument. That's a way of bullying you into submission and trying to embarrass you or shame you into its way of seeing reality. And James says, make no mistake about it. There are three characteristics of the wisdom that comes not from above but from below. It's earthly, it's unspiritual, and it's demonic. Earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. It is ultimately ignorant. It is ultimately ignorant. It is worldly. It is of this world and it is of this age. And if it comes from below, if it comes from this time, this place, it doesn't know what it doesn't know because it doesn't know all. If it comes from the here and now, it doesn't know about the age to come. If it comes from the here and now, it doesn't know about the unseen realms where God alone dwells in all his glory and his magnificence. I will tell you, and especially young people, listen to me well on this. The world influences us too much, and we almost, in fact, sometimes in our world, it's almost a virtue to be ignorant. The world influences us too much through media, music, internet, friends, coworkers, family. We don't do nearly a good enough job filtering, guarding, resisting. Show me what you read, I'll show you who you are. Show me what you listen to, I'll tell you what you're going to do. We don't understand how much, even if I intentionally on one level don't intend to participate, if I am constantly surrounding myself and bombarded by this, if I am constantly taking it in, it shapes me in all sorts of unmentionable and undescribable ways. Let me ask you a question this morning, especially you young people who maybe are influenced by the celebrity culture, the popular culture. Let me ask you something. Look at the people who influence you the most. And do you really want your life to turn out like theirs? Because I'll tell you, even the world on some level and all the media and the entertainment culture it has created and that it pushes on us 24/7 in a hyper-wired and connected age, even in our technological Tower of Babel society, have you ever noticed that there are still some TV shows, some movies, even some commercials that always have professionals, do not try this at home. Don't try to live the way I live. Don't actually try to do what I'm doing in this imaginary world I've created, because you know what? In the real world, it doesn't work, is what that disclaimer says. Now, the lawyers make them put it on there, but really, what's it saying? In the real world, my lyrics, my moves, my lifestyle, my style of driving in a car commercial, it doesn't work. It's not real. It's not true. Don't try this at home. Sometimes even the world is candid enough to acknowledge that the life they portray in the media is not real or even safe in the real world as opposed to their controlled fiction that they create on the screen or in our ears. Have you ever even stopped to think about or noticed this? Have you ever noticed actors and actresses who hypocritically, they'll portray a life of the sexually emancipated modern single person, but in the real life they're married? Even if their marriages are short-lived. But the fact that they choose marriage at all, even though on screen they portray what a liberated and wonderful lifestyle is to be single and be able to do whatever you want, whenever you want, with whoever you want, as long as everybody consents. And yet many of them still choose marriage at some point in their lives because they actually desire more commitment in their own personal life than what they portray as normal, natural, or to be celebrated on the screen. You ever thought about that? That's called hypocrisy. Betray one thing and live another. Especially young people, look at who influences you the most, what you listen to, what you watch, and therefore what gives you the ideas that you think about, the options that you consider in your life. And ask yourself this, do you really want your life to turn out like theirs? Or even better yet, do these people who proclaim one thing, do they not themselves sometimes do the other? Don't try this at home. Because I will tell you how many of their lives turn out if they're not hypocrites, if they actually live by their lyrics, if they actually follow their fictional movies and portrayals on TV and on the screen, they enjoy their 15 minutes in the spotlight of fame and fortune, followed by a lifetime of consequences in the form of frustration, failure, eventual irrelevance as all fame fades away, and concluding in heartbreaking misery. Drugs and drink are common. Why? Because they know that life doesn't work the way that they portray it and the way that they then try foolishly to live it. That's why so many celebrities are such sick people. And some of them even die tragically at young ages. Let's be honest, how many of us are ever terribly surprised when some well-known celebrity shows up on the morning paper dead? Because what they portrayed before the rest of us publicly, they knew privately is no way to live a human life. Now James says that wisdom, that's earthly. That's of the earth. It's worldly. And it's ultimately ignorant. Because it denies certain things about who and what we are, or what we have made to be. And no matter how much we try to fill the void that God has placed in our hearts, that eternity in our hearts that the preacher in Ecclesiastes talks about, it will not work. Wisdom of the world is ultimately about feelings. James's language of being unspiritual or even sensual in some of your translations. It's driven by feelings. It's guided by feelings. And we see that so much in our age, in our time, don't we? If you do, Disney tells us to do what you feel like. Be true to yourself. Be true to your heart. Oh, how often have you heard that line in some movie, especially a children's movie? Be true to yourself. Follow your heart. I don't know about you, but if I did everything that felt right to me, my life would be a mess. The world tells us to be guided by our feelings, to be defined by what I want to be. And I'll tell you, that doesn't just lead to the disaster of just following your feelings, but it also explains why everybody's so offended these days. Have you ever noticed that everybody's offended? You can't do anything anymore, hardly, because everybody is offended. Because everybody's driven by their feelings. It's even gotten to the point, I don't know if you know this in academia, it's even gotten to the point where a lot of professors on their syllabi have to put what are called trigger warnings, where they make certain reading assignments because a certain reading assignment might affect certain people in certain ways. We don't want anybody to be offended, so let me give you a warning before you even read a great work of literature about how you might find it offensive or difficult, how it might trigger your rage spiral. See, Paul comes along in the book of Titus, in Titus chapter 3, and he compares and contrasts the way of life that's driven by feelings, by how I feel, the sensuality and unspiritualness of this kind of wisdom and this way of living. Paul puts it this way in Titus 3, beginning in verse 3. For we ourselves were once foolish, Paul says. We were once this way. We were foolish, disobedient, led astray. Listen to what he says next, though. Enslaved by various passions and pleasures. My feelings aren't liberating. My feelings, my desires are enslaving, Paul says. They reduce me to the level of a mere animal. You know how my dog decides what it wants to do? What it feels like. My dog follows its heart. Paul says, for a human being, that's slavery. Animals have instinct. We have will. We can make up a mind. I can choose to not be driven by how I feel, but by what's right. I can make a decision. Paul says, I was once that way. I was foolish. I was ignorant, disobedient, led astray. I was a slave to the various passions and pleasures, passing my days out malice and envy, hated by others and hating one another. That sound like the newspaper this morning? That's what the wisdom of the world gets you. And yet all right-thinking people think this way, we're told today. Who's really happy in this most tolerant of ages? Why is it the more tolerant we get, the angrier people are getting? Paul says, that's the way I used to be before the gospel. That's the way the pagan world works. Enslaved by its feelings. It's no way to live. And then ultimately, it's of Satan. Jesus himself put it this way in John chapter 8 and verse 44 when he's confronting the Jews of his day. He said this, he says, you're of your father the devil. Your will is to do your father's desires. Whether you realize it or not, if you're not motivated by God's wisdom, if you don't see the world the way God sees it, if you don't live by God's values and virtues, if you don't follow God's insights into human nature and what it means to be human and how then to best live our lives, you're doing it Satan's way. It is demonic, James says. The wisdom from below is earthly, it is ignorant, it is unspiritual, it is sensual. And it is demonic. It is literally of Satan, driven by Satan's own way of doing life and doing reality. Oh, from the Old Testament to the New Testament, the beginning of wisdom is this: get wisdom, get real wisdom, get insight, whatever else you get in life, get insight, learn to see things for what they are and the way things are. That was 3,000 years ago from Solomon. James comes along 1,000 years after that and says, that's good advice. Understand the counterfeit worldly wisdom and understand what God's wisdom is. And the last couple minutes we have this morning, then let me quickly unpack what we can say about what James says about God's wisdom. God's wisdom is this. Number one, it pursues God's goals. It pursues God's goals. The wisdom from above is pure, peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy, peaceable, gentle, full of mercy, good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness, its result leads to a righteous life, is sown in peace by those who make peace. Ultimately, it comes from God. And this is something, by the way, it comes from above, James says, because this is not the way human beings ever figure out how to live life on their own. It has to be revealed from us and to us. And because it's revealed to us, it is therefore based on God's goals, God's version of reality and his addition of humanity. And so it pursues God's goals. Because it pursues God's goals, number two, it has God's motives. It has God's motives. Its goal is to produce a certain kind of life, a certain kind of world, a certain kind of culture and society. Because it is based upon God's principles, it has a different version of what we need to look like when the process is complete. It is based upon God's motives. It is all about peace-loving. Peace isn't just the absence of strife, it's the presence of wholeness. It is peace-loving. It fosters wholeness in ourselves and with others and in others. Rather than being the person who raises the temperature in the room, you are the person who brings sanity and relationship and wholeness. You bring love properly defined and relationship into the room when you enter. James says it is about peace, of being peaceful. It is about being gentle or considerate, James says. That means you think of others and you think how what you do and what you say is received by others. It means you think outside the box and how you encounter other people. It means that person who frustrates you and who they are or what they do or what they say, that person who frustrates you may actually be dealing with things you have no idea about. You ever thought about that? It may well be that the person who cut you off doesn't need to be honked at or screamed at or squealed at, doesn't need to be run around and you get back in front of them. The person who cut you off this morning may have been that struggling single mother, abandoned by her husband, no fault of her own, who worked 10 hours a day, will work 70 hours this week, and now is desperate to get home so she can feed her kids, help with the homework, wash their clothes, and hug them before they go to sleep, and she actually tries to be a parent for a few minutes. Because I don't know about you, but sometimes I'm in a legitimate rush to be somewhere. The wisdom from above is gentle or considerate, James says. God's motives, God's way of approaching life. Understanding there's often more going on than we recognize. Maybe that older couple walking way too slowly through the grocery store aisle and keeping you from getting done all the things that you have to get done today on your way too long to-do list. Maybe they're still struggling with yesterday's doctor's visit and the test results that were revealed, and nothing can be done, and all they have left together are moments like this and an attempt to feel normal about life anymore. Your rush is their sanctuary. Well, this is a different kind of wisdom. This is a different way of looking at life, isn't it? Peaceable, James says, and then considerate or gentle. Open to reason. It's reasonable. It's submissive. It's willing to yield. You can reason with somebody who is wise this way. Open to listening. Easily approached. Tell me your side of the story. Tell me what I don't know. Tell me how I can help you. Full of mercy. This is, as the Bible puts elsewhere, mercy triumphs over judgment. Doing to others as God has done to us. My only sternness, my only firmness, my only anger in life comes from righteous anger when God's will and God's values are violated. My sternness comes from holding people accountable to God's values, not because of the wrongs they've done to me personally. Impartial and sincere. A genuine person. What you see is what you get. No hypocrisy, no duplicity. I don't say one thing to one person, another something else. I'm not differently behind closed doors than I am outside in front of everybody. Because ultimately, as James comes back around to it, at the end of the day, I'm looking for peace from those who make peace. Godly motives that ultimately lead to the creation of a godly life. When Jesus came into the world, he pronounced blessedness upon peacemakers because they will be called the sons of God. The sons of God, those who are God-like, those who bear the family resemblance, those who build wholeness. Boy, is James big on peace in this passage. The bringing of shalom, the bringing of wholeness and wellness, the bringing together of the way God intended for life to actually exist. This is true happiness. This is true satisfaction. To be at peace with God and to be at peace with your neighbor. Blessed are the peacemakers. They're the sons of God, Jesus says. And he goes on just a few verses later to say, let your light shine before men so they may see your good works. When they can see the fruit of God's wisdom in your life, they'll give glory to your God and Father who is in heaven. You see, it's important to live by godly wisdom, not just for your own sake. It's important for God's glory that you do so, so that others can see the contrast between their life based upon the world's wisdom and your life based upon God's. And I will tell you, when people encounter a truly God-oriented life, a life that is truly lived completely, thoroughly, wholly on God's wisdom, it is a palpable difference, especially in this day and age. When people see a whole, healthy, functional family in a world of dysfunctional, broken homes, it'll stand out like light in the darkness. But James says, make no mistake about it, your life and the consequences of your life, personally and collectively, what you have happened in your life and among brethren, what you have happened in life in your home, what you have happened in your work, it is ultimately a product of who and what you really are. The fruits of your life come to harvest. Oh, knowledge and wisdom are important to God. In Psalm 111 and verse 10, the psalmist put it this way. He said, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. All those who practice it have a good understanding. They get it. They see things for what they really are. They understand the world for what it is. All those who practice it have good understanding. If you want to be like God, get close to God. Understand that his wisdom is really just his blueprint for reality. As we know and we've heard so often, he made the world and so he knows how it works best. But understand this as well, that God at the end of the day, God expects of us. Getting wisdom really is an option, it's a command. Your life will bear the fruit of whatever wisdom you live by. Therefore, per the Bible, get wisdom, get insight, get that which is truly God's view and God's version of reality. It's really hard in this culture. It's like living in a toxic environment where you absorb the poison without even trying sometimes. It's therefore all the more necessary that the people of God especially work so hard at cultivating in us the heart of wisdom that we can live well for God's sake and God's glory. If you're here this morning, you're not a child of God. We don't want to end this morning without giving the opportunity to do something about that. If you need to come forward, repenting of your sins, confessing with your mouth that Jesus is Lord, Savior, Son of God, we'll baptize you for the forgiveness of those sins this morning. And we'll like nothing better than to help you with that. You're here this morning, but your life does not reflect the God-given wisdom that's been revealed and given to you in the gospel first and all the subsequent revelation of the New Testament. If your life is broken this morning because you've lived by the world's wisdom and you know better, you're a child of God who needs to come forward this morning talking to your brother about what you've done. We'll pray with you and for you as you pray to God for forgiveness. And we'd like nothing better than to help you reacquaint yourself, reorient yourself, and reground yourself in God-given wisdom. We'll help you in whatever we can. If you'll come talk to us right now while we stand and while we sing.